Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Brizola, and today is the 6th day of August, I said June here, excuse me, we're getting ready to try a new format. Wasn't quite ready today, and run around and do some other things, but, they wanted to march some more people to the guillotine. We're going to try a new music introduction theme. It's more cheery. Wasn't quite ready today. Anyway, today's an interesting day of birthdays. We have Lord Alfred Tennyson, who's best known for the charge of the Light Brigade, and that was the splendid foolish charge of the British Light Cavalry. There's two movies out. One you can see, an excerpt you can see on our YouTube Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS, and it deals with the original movie, The Charge of Light Brigade, which was made during the 30s, featured Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland, I forget his name, Alexander Knox, I think, great cast, and there was some historical accuracy in it. And that relates to the Russian meddling in what was known as the Northwest Frontier. And we've had his interviews on this show, Brigadier Francis Ingle, who was with the Bengal Lancers, who served in that area of the world for over 30 years. And also David Niven was one of his classmates. David Niven was also in that movie, The Charge of the Light Brigade. And the poem that made Alfred Lord Tennyson famous was his poem about the Charge of the Light Brigade. Along that line, in the medical field, and of course, we had Florence Nightingale come out of the Crimean War. That's what that war was about, to block the Russians. The Russians always wanted access to warm waters, and the attitude of the British and the French was to bottle up the Russian bear, as the Russians were thought of during that period of imperialism, the 18th and 19th century. And there was a stupid war, and also the Turks were involved. And the military medicine, the care of the wounded and the dying, was so horrific that a British nurse, Florence Nightingale, came over there and started cleaning up the hospitals and the clinics in the camps where the British wounded were being treated in horrible, gross incompetence and uncleanliness and that. It's about the time also Sir Joseph Lister, the guy who invented anesthesiology and cleanliness in the medical practice of that era. And of course, today is also the birthday of one of the greatest British scientists, Sir Alexander Fleming, the guy who invented penicillin. And this saved a lot of lives, and we still use it today, although there are other antibiotics, but that's the basic that's used around the world. And it also made him very famous, and I guess he became rich, excuse me, on that. Another medical fact today, a guy named William Schroeder was the longest surviving recipient of a heart transplant. He lasted 620 days. I think it was an artificial heart that was involved. So, we're making progress. I don't know what's going to happen with this Obamacare. We keep hearing horror stories that it's going to be rationed, and people who are war babies who were born during World War II and in that whole period from 1940 to 50 are coming into their Social Security and senior citizen period now, and they're eligible for Medicare. And with the growing strain on the healthcare system in America, everybody agrees something has to be done, but what to be done is the issue, and nobody wants to be shortchanged. I will be putting up, there was a Tea Party protest here in San Francisco a few months ago, and the Swedish flag was flying in the area where the protest was being held. And Sweden has a very interesting healthcare system, which may be the model, and a lot of people don't know that or haven't paid attention to it, for what they're trying to do here. It's very interesting. It's got a lot of political overtones to it. So we'll be putting up what we found. Also, there's a lot of there's $9 billion that's been allocated by the federal government every year for community health clinics, HMOs. Excuse me, still getting over the cold. And nobody's talking about that. What's going to be the fate of these community health clinics? We have, I think, 9 here alone in San Francisco. And they're all around the country, and they're supposed to provide basic health care for people. If they can pay, they will be charged. If they can't be turned away. And even illegal aliens, illegal migrants, illegal immigrants cannot be denied medical care, even in the emergency room. And this myth that was promoted by the Obama people, that people go to the emergency room. What happens is, if it's not, if you're not having a heart attack, or you're been carved up in, by some thug on the street, they will refer you to the drop-in clinics. Otherwise, they will charge you $350 the last time I heard, maybe more money now. But that's what happens if it's not, and of course, if they're not having a baby. Speaking of babies, one of the Senator Leslie Lindsey Graham brought this up, and several others, Senator Kyle from Arizona, the anchor babies. Well, what people don't realize or have not been told or has been censored and suppressed in our media is the fact that these women who come over here from China and Taiwan and the Philippines, where, and other countries as well, Mexico or South America, we can't blame everything on the Mexicans. That's just like blaming everything on Bush too, which is ridiculous. They stay somewhere, and guess where they stay? Here in San Francisco, they stay in these affordable housing buildings, which are controlled by various ethnic groups who are politically connected. Sometimes they are city officials. And we have documented this in our hard copy of Veritas USA, and we will put this up on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site with the documentation of where these people stay. And we also came into possession of some birth certificates. We're going to redact what was not to be publicized, but this is how what happens, and we brought this up 10 years ago, that these people come over here from China, Taiwan, Philippines, and from South America, and there may be some others. They're pregnant, and they stay in these affordable housing projects. They go to public hospitals like San Francisco General. In fact, that's one of the big services over at San Francisco General is prenatal and births. So that's how these people have these babies. And then after they're released and it's safe to go back to their home country, they have an American birth certificate. But nobody knows who or what is coming back 20 years from now, 18 years from now. There's no special identification on these babies that were born here and may not be coming back here. There may be an imposter coming back here. It may be a Tong. There may be a junior mafiosi. Who knows? But that's one of the things that has not been publicized in the media, and it's known to quite a few people what's going on, what has gone on, and what will continue to go on until it's stopped. And this business of people coming here who are not citizens or not coming here on legal immigration to become citizens and having babies here has got to stop. It's one thing if somebody is a legal immigrant and they come here to become an American and to contribute to our society, and they may be pregnant. In my view, and other decent people's thinking, they should be allowed to have their babies here and to have grant them that American citizenship. It's different when people come here just to get the prenatal care and to get an American birth certificate and then return home, retaining the citizenship of the country from which they came from. So that's got to stop, and we have to reclaim our country. We are slowly being disenfranchised as American citizens within our own country by these radicals, these neo-Nazis and bourgeois communists. They're both socialists. They both come out of that political ilk. And remember, it was Ernest Röhm, who's the guy that brought Hitler to power. He used to say that Hitler was too conservative and he had to become more radically left, and it was one of the things that brought about his downfall in the Night of the Long Knives. So you've got to learn about history, and what you don't know does and can hurt, harm, and cost you. Let's see, some other interesting birthdays today. Those of you who remember I Love Lucy, Lucille Ball was born today, and one of the great actors, he was part Native American, Robert Mitchum, was born today. Excuse me. And one of the great English actors, he made a lot of films, he made a lot of money, but he died impoverished, Sir Cedric Hardwicke. He had a very distinctive Shakespearean voice. And I think he died in that hotel in New York where a lot of the artists used to live. And then some interesting historical events today. And some people think this is what the Obama administration is trying to do today. In 1861, during the Civil War, U.S. Congress passed an act called the Confiscation Act. And what that was the property owned by Confederates who were in revolt against the Union. Once the Union soldiers occupied that area, they could seize property, i.e. being slaves, and also slaves who were fighting for the Confederacy. There were some blacks who did fight for the Confederacy. This is a little known or little publicized in history fact. And also in 1862, they extended that act to any area occupied or conquered by the Union soldiers. Any blacks there, they became captives of war and thus were freed. Lincoln opposed that act because he thought that that would just embolden the Confederacy to fight on. It was the same line of thinking that when Harry Truman, President Roosevelt, especially Roosevelt during World War II, and Churchill said that Germany and Japan and Italy had to surrender unconditionally, and that created a mindset we've got to fight to the death on this instead of reaching a negotiated settlement or them laying down their arms earlier, and there'd be less bloodshed and less damage done to their countries. So that's what that was about. And then in 1864, 1965, in the Lyndon Johnson administration. We have this issue again today because an election is coming up. The Federal Voting Rights Act was passed, and that was to protect, especially to protect blacks who were being discriminated against and preventing from voting in the South and other areas controlled by segregationists and Ku Klux Klan and other white supremacists. And one of the ways that they controlled black voting or limited it was poll taxes and literacy requirements. For blacks who they didn't provide the schools for them to become educated to begin with. They were kept in a perpetual state of illiteracy. And then in 1914, we still have this problem, as Churchill used to say, there's always trouble in those damn Balkans. Serbia declared war on Germany, and that was the Sarajevo incident where Archduke Ferdinand went down there with his wife. He was considered liberal, and he was the heir to the throne of Austria-Hungary, which was the dual monarchy. He wanted to modernize the country. His uncle, Franz Ferdinand, was one of the longest reigning monarchs in European history. It was him and Louis XIV, and Franz Joseph became emperor at the age of 18 in 1848 when Europe was rocked by all of these civil wars and civil unrest, and he lasted until I think 1915 or 1916. And there's still some Habsburgs around who are called Churchill Habsburgs, who are hoping against hope that they will be called to, they will once again set up a monarchy in Austria this time because Hungary has its independence. And let's see what else happened today. Oh, yes, and of course, again, we have the problem of Haiti. A lot of people don't know that the U.S. Marines occupied Haiti in 1915 and stayed there for nearly 19 years. They left in 1934, and then my friend Drew Raines, a retired U.S. Marine, his great uncle General Smedley Butler was down there, and he was the guy who had fought in the Boxer Revolution, you know, the U.S. Marine detachments over there, and he also prevented the takeover of the country during the first or second FDR administration. So Drew Raines has a program also on Blog Talk Radio. It's daily. And it's called Marines Disquisition, and you should tune in to that. He has some interesting guests, and I used to be a guest on that, and then he told me to get my own show. I took his advice. It's a lot more work. But Drew is a great guy working down there in Arkansas, and he had some experience in this scandal involving Shirley Sherrod and the Pigford scandal. He's helping black farmers down there trying to get compensated by the government because they were discriminated against. There's a story that's come out in a few of the on the websites, which are becoming more reliable than print press. In fact, here in San Francisco, I was talking to several newspaper delivery truck drivers, and I said, you know, we see, it used to be that the Chronicle boxes were empty by 12 o'clock. Now they come around at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and the papers from yesterday are still there because people aren't buying. They don't believe these papers. The price went up. The quality went down even further. And so people, and also there is the effect of the web and the Internet, and these are more reliable, a lot of people thinking people think, than the print papers, and some of the traditional TV news broadcasts on the old NBC, CBS, ABC, and also public broadcasting, because we're seeing more and more that these media people are becoming or have become talking heads. They some of them lie, distort, omit, and you can't rely on them. And people realize that we're not, you know, people may be slow, but they're not stupid. And let's see, what else happened today? I'm a little bit slow. Oh, yes, these are the religious events. This is very interesting because it affects government funds even today. In 1727, a French order of Roman Catholic nuns, the Ursulines, set up the first Catholic charitable organizations, a hospital, a girls' school, and an orphanage. A lot of people don't know, and even Roman Catholics, which I am one, don't know that the Catholic Church, through various organizations, is the biggest recipient of federal funds. Over, I think it's $500 million a year, the last time I looked. And some of this is controversial because the people getting the money are engaging in politics, which you're not supposed to be. I always said a man and a woman, a person can't serve two masters. Not only does one of them get shortchanged, but they lose their underwear as well, or lose their shorts, as I said to one guy. Also, in 1774, Anna Lee came from England, and she set up this thing of the Second Coming of Christ, which later became known as the Shakers. So we had these religious sects coming. Well, that was the sect, but not the Roman Catholic Church, which goes back to year 33 A.D. But, you know, that more and more, and one of the objections to the gay, lesbian marriage agenda is that there are civil unions which provide most, if not all, of the rights that quote married couples have. And the objection to people who are thinking, you know, the history of government interference and meddling with religion, or trying to co-opt religion, that throughout history, every time government does that, whether it's the Roman emperor setting themselves up as gods, into the Middle Ages and into the 15th, 16th century, the religious wars. The government always screws up religion and co-opts it. The Inquisition, for instance, started as a Catholic Inquisition about heretics within the Catholic Church. It was called the Albigensian Heresy. It started in France. Then the savvy politicians, clever, cunning politicians, saw a way to control people. And so what they did was they encouraged the Inquisition and got control of some of it, especially in Spain and Portugal. Horrible things were done to people, that the church was allowed, a church like the Dominican. If you see some of the older movies, especially there's one with Errol Flynn, where he was a buccaneer and was captured by the Spanish and brought before the Spanish Inquisition. This was in the time of Elizabeth I. And sitting up on a high dais is this inquisitor, or this judge, with a black cowl and a white cassock. And those were known as the Dominicans, and it came from the Latin word Domini Carne, or sleuth hounds of the Lord. And what the church did was interrogate these people, put them on the rack, torture them to get a confession or make them confess and recant. And then even if they did, they were burned at the stake or garroted or had some horrible punishment. Or they were turned over to, quote, the civil authorities. Ironically, Napoleon, who was a Catholic, although and he crowned himself instead of letting the Pope crown him, when he sent in his armies into Spain during the Napoleonic Wars, one of the first things they did was to stop the Spanish Inquisition. And the Spanish Inquisition and the Portuguese Inquisition, Portuguese was even worse, were the last Inquisitions in Europe, and then the last one in South America was in Brazil. And this was into the late 1800s. Also, Portugal, I think, was the last country to abolish slavery. The British were one of the first. So, and all these things tie in to mindsets. And one group which controls the government wants to lord it over any way it can over other people whom they consider a lower status than they are. Of course, we're seeing that today with some of these people in government and in the judiciary who think that they not only sit on the right hand of God, think they are God. And people are objecting to that. And as I said, people may be slow, Americans may be slow, but they're not stupid. And they realize when they're getting screwed and they don't like it, and the wrath of of the American people is going to be felt, hopefully, at the polls. Incidentally, talking about the coming election, I'm really concerned, and I think people like Hannity see and listen carefully to people, the president's press secretary, Mr. O's press secretary, Gibbs, who said they're not worried about this November election and retaining their majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. That indicates to me, a veteran of voter fraud over the last 30, 40 years, that they've got something in mind and they either are preparing to put it into operation or already have started. And what we have seen, and you can go to our website, Californians Against Voter Fraud, and see some of the vote fraud that we discovered and publicized, investigated, researched, and publicized during the late 1990s. People, not only, you know, we laugh about the dead rising. In fact, we checked on one woman's family to see if she was still alive, and they said, and they were very cynical about it, they said, she's dead, we rose her, she arose to vote, and she'll rise again to vote at the next election, and they slammed the phone down. But that's the attitude of these people. Also, we do have a, on one of our, the Californians Against Voter Fraud, the voter fraud registration of somebody who was definitely not a U.S. citizen and was, in fact, in this country illegally. And there's a lot of that. And I saw ACORN people and the rest of that ilk, how they manipulated elections in the past here in California, Northern California primarily. And during the Bush, what's his name, Al Gore election, what they did was, according to their campaign records, which we checked, they spent a lot of money on buses. And what they did was they registered people down in Southern California, had them vote absentee, then bus these people up to Northern California where they registered and voted, and then they disappeared. And they call that, or we call that, the Macarena Express. And you know, this goes on, and but you know, on the absentee ballot voting, this is one of the problems with it, is that when what they did here in San Francisco was they had a list of addresses in remote areas of the city. Their vote fraud artists registered to vote at these addresses, even though they didn't live and never lived and weren't going to live at these addresses. Then they demand, and I saw them do this, an absentee ballot and got one and voted absentee and then disappeared. Then usually 30 days after somebody registers to vote, whether they're legal or not, or it's a legitimate registration, a voter registration card goes out to that address with that person's name on it. Well, when one Nick Rommel, who was gay, he's dead now, unfortunately, when he got some cards at that address, and he lived in a remote area, city, he called up the voter registrar's office and said, I don't know who these people are. They never lived here, and they're not going to live here. And but it was too late. They had already voted. And this is how we get some of these wacko politicians in office and how they stay in office through this sophisticated vote fraud. I mean, we laugh about the dead rising in Colma and other cemeteries around the country and how they do it in Cook County. But they also have done it quite successfully here in Northern California. And I suspect that we've exported this voter fraud expertise to other parts of the country. So if you're concerned about the sanctity of your and the security of your ballot, you've got to pay attention to these things. And if you want to do some civic service, I suggest you go into your local voter registrar's office, and you have a right to look at the rolls. Check your neighborhood. Start there and see how many of these people that you recognize who are in the voter registrar's rolls. And, you know, you can go around to their building, their apartment, or their house and see if they really live there or have lived there. So this goes on. And this is how we got the gay agenda. They, in 1991, two lesbians and one gay man registered ran for office under the guise, and this is their definition, they defined themselves calling themselves the Lavender Sweep. And we found out they were engaged in all kinds of voter fraud. All three of them, we could not verify their addresses here in San Francisco County. And they got away with this, and they still are. Now, in Los Angeles County, it's been reported that a major politician down there is being prosecuted for a number of election law violations, didn't live where he claimed to live, was voting there. So, but it hasn't happened up here in Northern California. There seems to be this strange immunity. The other things that people should be concerned about, a lot of people are up in arms who are concerned about the sanctity of marriage, and that this is something, marriage is something that belongs in the churches. And let the church, you know, if somebody wants to, two guys or two girls want to get married, let them go to the church of their choice, the Episcopal Church or the Church of the Burning Bush or whatever. But keep the government out of it. Do you want a civil union? It's there for you to take advantage of. Use it. And make sure, I always tell people, whether you're going into business or jumping into bed, first thoroughly check out your partner. You know, ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you, and often does. But what's happened with the courts? Now, people are jumping on, they finally discovered, and there's a question about whether he should have recused himself. This Judge Walker, he's not related to George Walker, who's black, Black Panther, a suspected member and involved in the Cedenary case and other cases where he ripped off clients. But he's a blanco, he's a gringo, as the Latinos say. Anyway, the question is, who did he do all of the legal research for his decision? Now, there's been a valid argument made by judges around the country, federal judges, that there's so many cases that they don't have the time to give them the due care that they're entitled and people should get, and therefore they have to rely on the competence, the honesty, and the efficiency of court clerks, legal researchers, and staff attorneys. However, we have found out, and it's been reported in some of the legal papers, that the courts have been infiltrated and subverted by various political and sexual preference groups, such as Bay Area Lawyers for Independent Thinking, or whatever the hell it is. And what they are is a bunch of people pushing crotch politics agendas which don't belong in the court. And we have seen even more blatant activity of these staff attorneys, especially in the gay marriage controversy, politicking and protesting outside the courthouse where they are employed. Now, when people work for the federal government, they used to be, and when I worked there, there used to be a code of ethics that you had to swear that you would uphold and abide by. I have not seen a similar code of ethics for the state courts, and I don't know if other people around the country have looked into this, and they should, because you never know if you're going to be coming up for whatever reason in a court, whether it's probate, child custody, police court, civil court, criminal court, and you don't know who the judge that you're coming before, and nobody knows who vetted these people off, and people are becoming aware of that. How do these people get to wear the black robe and to sit in judgment of their fellow human being? That's an issue that half of these people that I have seen and experienced in my lifetime have no business, so they should be in front of a judge instead of sitting up in judgment on other people. And this is an issue that people need to become aware of, need to pay attention to, especially with this illegal alien business. And I use the term alien because a lot of these people are not coming here to become American citizens. They're coming here because of economic distress and disaster down in their own country. They cannot make enough money down there to feed their families or to try to go to school or to send their kids to school. And they want a better life, as they're entitled to as human beings, for their families. And it's a shame that they got to come up here. Incidentally, we did have a worker guest program, and guess who voted not to extend it? Mr. O, when he was a senator. And he ain't the only one. So, I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy about this business of, you know, we're going to defend the borders and all that. Nobody's looking at the Canadian border where we know that, especially up in there's an Indian reservation that borders the Canadian border up there near Niagara, and they used to be smuggling cigarettes through from Canada in through the Indian reservation into the United States. And also Windsor, Ontario, we have a 3,000-mile border that used to be the largest undefended border in the world. We need to defend that border up there as well. Also on our west coast, through Blaine, Washington, the Okanagan, which is part of eastern Washington, there's drug dealers come through there, illegal aliens. And I have to confess that when I had my first job here in San Francisco in 1968, I did work with a young woman who was in the country illegally, and she was working, and she got a Social Security number. She later died several years later. She went back to Canada, but at the time, and we used to party together, we knew she was from British Columbia, and nobody thought anything of it. And I guess shame on me at the time for not thinking that, no, you know, it's just one of those things. But it's far worse than people realize, and it's getting worse and will continue to get even worser. Now, there's an interesting case that just came out of the, came across of researching something else, which I still do even though I'm retired, came out of the Central the Ninth Circuit Central District of California, which would be Fresno, Sacramento. And it's a case where four defendants were charged in federal district court with conspiracy and harboring and concealing seven illegal aliens in their residence for private financial gain. Two of the defendants moved to suppress the evidence recovered during the searches of the residence. So this is what the U.S. District Court held, and this is not an illegal alien case that's been talked about, but yet it's publicized. The fact that the defendants slept overnight in residence did not render them overnight guests. Defendants lack reasonable expectation of privacy in residence, as would confer standing upon them to challenge the search, which they contend was illegal. Even if one defendant had liberty to leave residence on his own accord, the fact alone was insufficient to establish standing. So the judge, Wilson, in this case, motion to suppress denied. So that's, and this, incidentally, this goes on here in Northern California in affordable housing that we know, in fact, they brag about it. One group, which was set up by city employees here in San Francisco, Mission Housing, have, when they were called on this several years ago, they said, we have the right to shelter Latinos regardless of their legal status. Now, you know, and that building and their salaries has been paid for and is paid by the U.S. taxpayer. But this is their arrogant attitude. In other words, you know where you can go and we'll help you go there. That kind of attitude, arrogance. And this goes on. It's not only with the Latinos. It's not only with the Mexicans. And also, everybody is looking at Bell, California, and the $1 million a year salary that this mayor got. Well, it's far worse here in Northern California, which they're not talking about. We have city employees who have set up, and I told the U.S. attorney about this. I told him in writing. We have his response that city employees in San Francisco and around the Bay Area have set up these 501c3s to get HUD money. They get what is called site acquisition. If they have to buy the site, they get rehab money to rehab a building or to construct a new building, and they also get subsidized rents. And they get their salaries out of this. And they, after 20 years or so, thanks to Nancy Pelosi and Dan Rastinkowski, we call it Rastinkowski's Revenge, they will get to keep the building, and they can kick out, they can evict the tenants, the poor tenants who were there and for whom the building was set up by the federal government or financed by the federal government for affordable housing. But this is, and of course, these properties are often in very property areas that are becoming gentrified, and some of them are worth millions. And so the people who set up the corporation and who stayed with it and control it, this is their fat retirement package. This is their golden blimp. This isn't a parachute. This is their golden blimp. and we've got to shoot it down. We think that anything that's funded, any real estate that's funded for affordable housing by the federal government, by the American taxpayers, that should be in a public land trust. So that's something for you to think about. And it's ironic that Americans who have paid the taxes to fund these projects, the same Americans who maybe or who have lost their own housing and can't get housing in these affordable housing projects because they're not the right color, they're not the right class, they're not the right gender, they don't pay bribes. In fact, in San Francisco and in Northern California, we had a HUD official who was charging $500 a bribes to get Section 8, to get people jump to the line, head of the line to get a Section 8. Well, when they found out what he was doing, they didn't prosecute him. They transferred him to the Las Vegas Housing Authority, and so he can play the crap tables there. But this is what goes on, that Americans have paid for this housing, they keep funding it, but when they, if they ever come to the time when they need it, they can't get it, they're kept out. So, again, what you don't know is hurting and harming you and denying you the access that you are entitled to as an American citizen and as a legal immigrant. There are legal immigrants in these housing, but we've had, and also we've had other illegal immigrants. We had a South African who spit on a guy who had AIDS. He did nothing to the, he was a real nice chap, and she didn't like him, and he sat down near her, and she had a snit fit, and she spat on him. And this woman was in this country illegally. I mean, this is what goes on. The other thing that's going on, and if you know somebody who has AIDS, who lives alone, this is another scandal which we expose, that if you're dying and if you have expensive or valuables in your house or you own and you're ill or, you know, you're at that point where you think you're going to die or you die unexpectedly, there are these people that raid estates. It's happened in public housing. They even take people's cars and drive them. We had in the public housing authority a manager, a guy died, he had a nice car, he was the manager of the housing project, took the keys out of his apartment and used the car. So these things go on. Also, there are these I call them AIDS grave robbers. A lot of, some of these AIDS people do have nice things, and they don't have anyone to care for them in their final days. And so when they're dying or carted off to AIDS hospice, these people come find a way to get in there and just rape the house, take the valuables, and then sell them. And they got, some of them got caught. These are the things that go on. So protect yourself. You know, again, what you don't know, you should know. And then the other agenda that people are concerned about, it's not only the right, so-called, to marry. This agenda is aimed, it's got a wide, it's a big agenda. And it's the people, the politicians and the political activists who are promoting this gay, lesbian marriage also want to bring in their, whether they're legal or not, foreigners, especially young ones, so that they can marry them here. This has happened, incidentally. There was a couple of cases involving wealthy pedophiles. What happened was, and I won't mention the family name, very wealthy American family. The guy, man who inherited all his money was a homosexual. And what he did was he went to Europe, and he got involved with this young girl who had a brother. And he hired her as, he said, let's get married. But they didn't have, they didn't consummate the marriage. But the brother was part of the deal, and that was his bed partner. And I'm familiar with that case. And there have been other cases of this, not as many as that we know about, but that does happen. And that happened before this gay marriage controversy. The other issue is that if this is expected, and everybody expected this to go to the Ninth Circuit Appellate Court here in San Francisco, where they meet, I think it's about 40 judges, and since that court has been infiltrated, although they have been making some interesting decisions recently that are reasonable and they follow the law. Maybe they've got some new staff attorneys and clerks there. But anyway, if it does go to the U.S. Supreme Court with the Kagan nomination cleared, approved by the Senate, she's seen as a closet lesbian, and there has been a gay up on that court before. Got the sore throat, but we'll get into that another day because J. Edgar Hoover knew about it, and it came up in one of the books about Hoover. But anyway, Abe Fortas. And it came up when Lyndon Johnson used Abe Fortas as one of his lawyers in Washington. And the Fortas law firm, Porter and Fortas, was one of the big law firms in Washington. And LBJ appointed him to the U.S. Supreme Court. Then he did something that they don't like, the associate justices don't like, and that is, they don't like one of their members, a fellow associate, being elevated to the chief of the Supreme Court, the chief of the United States Supreme Court. That's what LBJ did. It was such a ruckus that some things were about to come out, and what happened was Abe Fortas quietly resigned. He's dead now, and but that's when that came out. But the issue is they're afraid, the people who defend traditional marriage, I guess we could use that phrase, are afraid that the U.S. Supreme Court will prove what this Judge Walker did here in the Ninth Circuit District Court here in San Francisco. Then they are going to demand, the don't ask, don't tell opponents are going to demand that gay lesbian marriages will be allowed in the military. That's where it's headed. So, and they've already had this problem in Canada. It was even more exotic. A young man up there in the Canadian Army, because they allowed gay marriage, got married, and then he decided he wanted to become transgendered. Incidentally, but you don't hear about this in the traditional press here. It's one of these things that have been censored and suppressed. This Army private, Bradley Manning, I didn't know he was actually his mother's English. And his father was an American serviceman who was stationed in England. And Manning is gay. He wanted to have a transgendered operation. He had a spat with his lover, and this whole revelation of the Afghan papers, if we can call it that, was a result of his being mad at the world, mad at his lover, and just mad at his situation. And, of course, people's lives have been put in danger. And, of course, if he had been in the Russian army and done that, we would have heard no more of this because he would have been got a bullet in the back of his neck. They don't fool around over there. And so that's where that came. That's where those things end. And, of course, we don't know if Julian Assange, the word is that he may be gay. That's come up. And it's unfortunate because people don't remember that there's, over the last 100 years, there's been a lot of serious homosexual treachery involving national security. And it goes back to the Dreyfus case, Colonel Rader, the Austrian army, in World War One, when they some German spies tried to subvert some sailors. World War Two, similar situation, that there was a whorehouse set up by the Brooklyn Navy Yard. A congressman was alleged to have been involved. Some German Nazis were trying to subvert, sexually compromise some sailors and people working in the shipyard. We've had the theft of the atomic bomb during the 50s. The what's his name? Oh boy, so many of these spies. Burton and McLean case, the British Foreign Office people. One was secretary to the British Embassy here in Washington, or in Washington, not in Washington, and he was caught with having sex in a car on a Virginia road, and the scandal was just too much. They knew this guy had serious behavioral problems, so he was shipped back to England. And then he helped the Rosenbergs and Klaus Fuchs steal the secrets of the atomic bomb. and sell them to Russia. And then, of course, he was also involved with Colonel, who was in the KGB, later became a KGB colonel in recognition of his spy work, Kim Philby. So Burgess and McLean, those are the notorious three. And then there was the Klaus Fuchs, the East German scientist. And then we had another case of a homosexual, Captain Vassal in the British Navy. He was caught spying for the Russians. And we don't know, we're not sure about a couple of the Americans who were caught spying for the Russians. The one notorious case, the infamous Walker case, which involved four or five Navy people, John Walker, who was retired, his brother, his best friend, his son was on the USS Enterprise, and a similar case, although I don't think there's no indication that he was gay, but he was racist, he didn't like blacks, he was in charge of working in the communications section on the USS Enterprise, turning over sack loads of transcripts and Navy codes. They only made $100,000 on this stupid espionage thing, which cost them life imprisonment instead of execution. So that happened back in the late 70s, early 80s, the Walker family. It's a notorious case. But we need to take more care and pay more attention to our security. And Americans, as I've said this repeatedly, because I was involved in some of this stuff on a very low level when I first went to work for the government in communications, that Americans think that spying is the Nathan Hale, I have one life to give only for my country and all of that. It's a very dirty business, a necessary business, and, this is the way things have been since the beginning of espionage, which is the second oldest profession, they say. The first, as you should know, is prostitution. But again, this is real life, and people have got to grow up and realize that, hey, this is the world we live in. There are treacherous people out there who take advantage of other people and other nations, and they'll sell out anybody, like Soros. I don't understand how a Hungarian Jew, if that's what he is, I hear he may be actually Russian, could, during the Holocaust, could sell, and there were others, by the way, it wasn't only Soros, sell out their fellow Jewish brethren to Eichmann and the Nazis, and they were on a one-way trip to Auschwitz and Belsen, and then somehow come out of that whole situation with all of this money, which he invested and became a billionaire, and now he's trying to control the government of the United States or have a controlling interest. There are people who think that he should be deported. And he should be before an immigration judge, him and some of those other people. We have to take back our country without force. You know, we can do it with the ballot box. And I'm very concerned that Gibbs is right, that they're preparing something to ensure that they don't lose the majority in Congress and that they may even try to increase their majority in Congress. That's even worse. So, again, pay attention to these things. It's your life. It's your children's life. It's our country. So next week we're trying this hour format. We'll hopefully have the new music themes and cheery things and be more tightly organized. Again, excuse me. Go to our YouTube sites. We just put up two more videos. One. Those of you who use Facebook, if you're not aware of it now, your personal information is subject to being sold to commercial interests. And there's a scandal involving this homosexual pedophile magazine called XY, which went bankrupt, but they have an asset of kids, young boys' personal information, and that's an asset in this bankruptcy. And there's the fear that this is going to be sold to people who don't have their best interests in mind. And besides, it's a pedophile magazine to begin with. It deserved to die. It started here in San Francisco and then moved to Southern California. But this is an issue. We'll be doing more on the privacy issue. Also, those of you who are concerned about things at some of the grocery stores or that are going on to grocery stores, we discovered that, and we got to confirm this, what the policy is, that at one major grocery chain, people were on the out, where there was an outside electrical plug, were plugging in their laptops, powering up their laptops and sitting there and doing their computer work. Well, coming from a law background, the first thing I thought in an insurance background is, what if they get electrocuted or shocked or injured? Will some clever lawyer come along and create a liability situation for the grocery store? And, of course, if the grocery store has to pay off, those will reflect that insurance bill and payment is reflected in higher costs at the cash register for you and I. So, you know, it doesn't stop there. Also, if you're concerned about higher insurance, auto insurance rates, and something that nobody's looking at, or few people are, the medicals, that are medical expenses that are incurred by these auto accidents, which a lot of them are preventable, start reporting these reckless drivers. Start taking their license plates, calling up the cops, demanding that the traffic cops stop these people, and if necessary, yank their licenses. We joke about this. A few years ago in France, the French take their holidays in August and go to the country, and that there was so much drunken driving, reckless driving on the French roads that they had these flying squads of cops. If you've ever been to France, those cops are something else. Sometimes you think they're closet fascists. But anyway, what happened was these drivers who were drunk or were driving recklessly or violating speed limits, whatever, the cops stopped their car, took the keys, and made them walk back to Paris. And, of course, you know, they had to get their car back. And also, if you're coming to San Francisco, don't wear flowers in your hair. Those days are over. And I'm not joking. More and more people who are from out of town don't realize that you cannot that even if you park illegally and knowingly do this, like block somebody's driveway, if you get towed, it's going to cost you a minimum of $500 plus the ticket. If your car is damaged, you have no recourse against the city or the owner of the property. You shouldn't have parked there to begin with. Also, if your registration is, if there's anything wrong with it, the San Francisco police will not release your car. And then there's daily storage fees, I think of $75 or maybe $150 a day. So they're going to stick it to you, and plus the parking tickets. If you acquire more than four, your car will be booted so fast that you know, you won't know what hit you. So pay attention to these things, and we'll try to keep you up to date so you can have a safe trip, a good visit if you come to this area, and you should. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Some of the people in it are not beautiful, but that's the way life is. But again, you've got to be aware of your own security and be aware of people around you and respect your neighbors and, if you're a visitor, respect the rights of the residents. So we're going to end up, before I get hoarse here, with our favorite theme. Here we go.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Say, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it
qualified Democrat?
Jack Riley, the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joke.
or poker? Which is more important?
Parrot race.
Yeah, which is more important? This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening, and go view our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas. Okay. Yeah, long show. Well, we'll do that.
The problem isn't that we're taxed too little, it's that we spend too much. The voters, or the union members, the union staff, or the leaders, or
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.